Hey, what's up, everybody? You are listening to Rich, aka Library Monster, with another installment of Behind the Library. Woo! It has been a whirlwind. It has been a crazy couple of days. So apparently, and this is kind of New York centric. Those of you that know, I'm hitting you guys up out of Gotham City, New York City, born and raised. I'm a New York boy. So I thought we had turned a curve on COVID-19, but apparently that's not the case. I mean, if you've been paying attention to the news, even marginally, you know that we were the epicenter of this crisis for a very long time, since the beginning. And I have a bit of a doomsday prepper streak in me, so I've been paying attention to this thing since when it just popped up in Wuhan, you know. And I had taken precautions, and I was one of the first people who actually had masks. I gave a lot of them away, the ones that I did have, and I kept a decent amount for myself and my family. I was one of the first people wearing them. And people looked at me like I was crazy in those first couple of days. Then a week went by, and everyone started going, I better get me a mask. And there were none to be had. People were doing everything they could. Women cutting up their bras and making masks. It was crazy. It was bananas in those first few weeks of COVID. So apparently looks like we're headed back to square one. We're headed for that second wave. And I was afraid of this. You know, I was telling people for a while, I said, listen, you know, yeah, it's dying down, but, you know, we're going to head for a second wave when flu season hits and the weather gets colder. And again, me being like the damn little ant trying to warn the lazy grasshopper, you know, people didn't listen, and now we're headed for a second wave. And so, yeah, New York's Mayor Bill de Blasio just made an announcement about these numbers. These numbers are not encouraging at all. And we did a pretty good job of stamping out COVID in the last few months, but it seems to be roaring back. So I'm just going to play this for you guys. This is Mayor de Blasio on the COVID-19 resurgence.
The ability to stop a second wave. And for weeks, actually, our numbers were higher than we wanted, but they had leveled off. Now, unfortunately, we're seeing a real growth in the positivity rate in this city. And that is dangerous. So we have one last chance to stop a second wave. It's as simple as this. This is my message to all New Yorkers today. We can stop a second wave if we act immediately, but we have one last chance, and everyone has to be a part of it. Just like you fought back the coronavirus after March and April, brought this city back, made it one of the safest places in the country, we have to do that again. And we have to act urgently. Citywide positivity now, the positivity level above 2%. And it's been increasing. That is a problem. We have gone well past the threshold for the number of cases we set. The case numbers continue to increase. That is a problem. We're seeing household transmission. We're seeing community spread. We're seeing things we have not seen in a long time. And we have to stop them.
Yeah, so that was Mayor Bill de Blasio talking about the situation in New York. It is very disheartening to see that happening. But that COVID lockdown fatigue, man, that's been something. I started seeing slowly more and more people out and about, less people wearing masks. You know, social distancing, if I'm being very candid, is now a memory. Most people do not stand 6 feet apart anymore. And, looks like we're seeing the unfortunate results of that. Now, I've always been one to say, listen, wear your masks, take precautions. People, especially people on the right, love to say, the death rate is so low and this, that, and a third. I'm like, listen, man, we don't know that much about this virus. We really don't. We have no idea what the long-term effects of COVID infection is. For all we know, everyone who gets it and gets better, right, will drop dead in 5 years, just out of the blue. Could happen. We have no idea. We don't know what the reinfection rate is. COVID-19 seems dangerous because it seems like it takes a little bit out of you every time you get it. You get it once, you get over it, but you're not the same. You get it twice, you get over it. Again, you're weaker. It just weakens you and weakens you and weakens you. It finally takes you out, man. It's a very, very dangerous disease. I think people that are downplaying this are making a very big mistake. A very big mistake. Because another thing is, it's not logical that this would be not a dangerous virus. It's not logical. If you've been watching it for as long as I have, and you saw what happened in China, and you saw how the Chinese government reacted to this thing, they were the world's second largest economy, and they damn near imploded that whole situation just to get a handle on this virus. You don't do that for something that's not serious. They were welding people in their homes and just hauling people off to hospital against their will, by the way, and committing all sorts of human rights violations to get a handle on COVID-19. And you just don't go through the rigmarole of that. Even in a totalitarian state, you don't go through the trouble, the hassle, the economic investment in doing all of that for something that you don't perceive as a threat. So, I think that we're staggering through the darkness when it comes to this disease, and we just don't know. And so you got to err on the side of caution. That's what I do. You know, I mask up. Now, as far as, you know, a mask mandate, a lot of people are saying that President Biden will be doing that when he takes office. I don't really approve of that. I don't believe in, coming down the power of the state that much on an individual. I just think that the smart thing to do would be to wear your mask and observe mild social distancing, just common sense measures, man. Common sense, at least until we get a vaccine. And that's the good news, and I put good news in quotation marks, because yes, Pfizer has announced that they have a 90% effective vaccine in the works. They looks like they're in the running to be number one, the first company to release a COVID vaccine. That sounds promising, but I tell you right now, there is no way in hell I'm taking that vaccine. And it's not because I'm some anti-vaxxer either. That's not true at all. I think there's a mountain of evidence to support the utilization of vaccines and vaccination as a legitimate means of controlling infectious diseases. But at the same token, like I said, we don't know that much about this disease. And frankly, we're gonna know even less about this vaccine that they've come up with. I mean, you can't even, like, say you get a vaccine, right? First of all, what are the side effects? They might have a vague idea maybe of what you might experience in the first few days, few hours, but they really have no idea. What are the long-term effects? They can't tell you. The fact is, this has been a rushed job by every company pursuing this. And while I don't necessarily attribute malice, I do believe that when you rush, mistakes get made. And, I don't have the confidence that the testing required to make sure that this vaccine is safe and effective, by the way, is there. You know, we're taking it basically on Pfizer's word that it's 90% effective. Really? I mean, they have everything to gain. Like, look at the article I have up on now, if you can see this on YouTube. For those that are just listening, it says Pfizer leaps 15% on news that its COVID-19 vaccine is over 90% effective in preventing illness. This is from Markets Insider. All right, businessinsider.com, the market section. Now, I may come off a bit cynical here, but look, Pfizer just made a killing, and they haven't even released the vaccine yet. What does that mean? You know, everyone knows whoever comes up with the vaccine, they're going to make a shit ton of money. That's just the reality. The governments around the world are going to scramble for whatever company comes up with it, and they're going to buy a ton of this vaccine. So, I mean, they're releasing this news. I think the timing of it is a bit suspect. You know, right after the mainstream media has basically anointed Biden the next president of the United States, they come out with this news. That's very interesting to me. And they've made a ton of money just in announcing this. just in the announcement. What's to say they're not just going to, you know, a couple days from now go, oh, we goofed, sorry. And just, you know, whoever was an investor just walks away with the profits. You think these things don't happen? This thing was timed. They don't release news like that without timing it. So I found that very interesting. And another thing I found very interesting, and I say very interesting, look, I'm not getting all conspiratorial here. I'm just presenting mainstream news and mainstream information that I find very convenient. Okay? Check this out. From Yahoo Finance. Now, this is from November 5th. Okay, for those that are watching on YouTube, and they can see what I'm talking about here now. For those that are just listening, check it out. U.S. government looking into Pfizer's operations in China. This is from November 5th. Okay, so this is from, and this is being reported by Yahoo Finance and Reuters. So, this is before they announced that they had this vaccine, okay? Now, I'm just going to read a little bit of this. It's a very short article. It says, Pfizer received informal requests relating to its operations in China from the U.S. Department of Justice and the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission in June and August, respectively. Its regulatory findings showed on Thursday the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act units of the Justice Department and the U.S. SEC had sought documents relating to its Chinese operations, the company said in its filing, adding that it is producing records pursuant to these requests. This is... So, we have a company who has shady dealings going on with a foreign government, right? That foreign government is a centrally planned economy, right? And this company just happens to have a vaccine, working vaccine, that is 90% effective, allegedly, ahead of a bunch of other companies working on it. And it's for a vaccine that came as the result of a disease that came out of China. It's just, and here's the thing, who's going to buy the most of this vaccine? It's not the United States. It is not the United States. China will buy the most doses of this vaccine if it is legitimate. They have way more people. They have a higher population. So the Chinese government is definitely going to want to cut a deal with Pfizer. So I'm just thinking about this thing and I'm just going, who in their right mind is thinking that this announcement of the vaccine doesn't have some kind of shady business dealing in it somewhere? So I'm not taking that vaccine, man. I'm not doing it. I'm taking it right now. I'm not going to take any vaccine, to be honest with you. I'm not going to take any vaccine that I am not sure it is not going to have any side effects. So if I have to wear a mask for the next, like, I don't know, 5 years, I'm going to do that. I'll do it. I'll wear the mask. Doesn't bother me at all. Because, and I say 5 years, because 5 years is a good amount of time to see if this thing does anything to the people that do take it. And I hope it doesn't. I really hope this is all legit and it doesn't have any long-term side effects. But I just do not want to take this vaccine. And then 5 years from now, someone tells me, hey, listen, I know you don't have any history of it, but you got cancer now. And you best believe that if you take this vaccine, especially since more than likely they're not going to charge for it. And in not charging for it, don't think you're not going to have to sign some terms and conditions. And I bet you, I will bet anything, those terms and conditions are going to include you can't sue if you get sick from this. I will bet anything. There's going to be terms, there's going to be conditions that you're going to have to adhere to get your hands on this vaccine, especially since it's going to be for free, or allegedly for free. It's, you know, the taxpayers are going to pay for its distribution and all that stuff, but you get what I'm saying. There is no way you're going to take this thing without waiving certain rights. No way. Because they know they rushed it. They know they haven't done the testing. They know that there's a very big possibility that people could have adverse reactions to this. And also, understand something. Not everyone, this is not a, human beings are not cookie cutters when it comes to their health. Everybody has different health situations. You know, everyone reacts differently to vaccines. We have a, there's like a, you know, a baseline that you can kind of go with, but you know, what if you have some underlying condition, you know, that you don't know that you'll have a reaction to this thing? Could be. We have no idea, right? Because again, we don't know that much about the disease. We have a disease we don't know that much about, and we are developing a vaccine for it that we also don't know that much about. We're just looking to see, does it protect you against this? And it might. What if it somehow opens you up to infection from elsewhere? What then? We don't know. The fact is, we don't know. So I urge everyone, listen, don't panic. Okay, don't get crazy. But live your life, right? And proceed with caution. Always just proceed with caution. Just have a healthy skepticism about things. Don't keep your mind so open that your brains fall out, but keep a healthy skepticism about things. So I, for one, will not be taking this for some time. And I shudder to think what would happen if they said, listen, you either take this thing or you can't work. I really hope that doesn't happen, because you're going to see, then you're going to see some shit in this country. Let me tell you, you're going to see a whole lot of interesting things happen if you start telling people they have to take a vaccine, or they're not allowed to earn money or go to work. I think people will not react kindly to that. And I think that crosses party lines. I think that goes for Democrats and Republicans. This is one thing I've heard, is both liberals and conservatives going, I don't want to take that damn vaccine. I've heard both sides of the aisle say that same thing, and I can't blame them. Can't blame them at all. But just moving away from that morbidness, something also I found a little interesting today. The Department of Education here in New York, and this is a New York story, but this is not going to be confined to New York City by any means. The DOE wants to move away from grades determining class rank. Did you get that? They want to move away from grades determining class rank because they don't want people that have actually, earned a high grade to actually become the valedictorian. They want to take into account things like motivation and integrity and these things that you can't possibly measure in any way, shape, or form. It's subjective. Who's to decide who has motivation, who doesn't? Who's to decide who has integrity and who doesn't? Department of Education? Some bureaucrat? I don't think so. You know, here's the thing. They want to look. I get it, right? Not everyone's a good test taker, you know, and that's messed up. It is. But at the end of the day, we have to have some mechanism for measuring performance. Otherwise, then how do we know things are being effective? We don't. You know, if you, because anyone can be motivated. You can be motivated and still not get the job done. I mean, that's just, I mean, if we're being honest here, someone could be motivated, very motivated, and they just are not producing the results. Someone could have a lot of integrity, but that doesn't mean they did all the work. I don't see how this is going to be beneficial. And just to bring it a little bit more tangible, like with me, myself, I had very few good teachers, if I'm being honest. And I came up through the public education system. I can count my good teachers on one hand. The rest of them, you could tell they didn't want to be there. You could tell they didn't want to do this. And so what ended up happening was I hated the classes. They didn't like me. I did not like them. But I was good at taking a test. You see? So they couldn't fail me just because they didn't like me. There was something wrong. Like they would try to give me bad grades, and I would take the standardized test, and I would just ace the standardized test. And then I would just look at them like, what now? I didn't need you. And that felt so good, man. It felt so good to just, because here's the thing. What's, if we start taking into account these things, these immeasurable things, right, then people that kiss the teacher's ass are going to get ahead, right? Even if it's a bad teacher. So I just don't feel right about somebody who's getting straight A's, passing all their tests, and then somebody who's just a kiss ass gets ahead of them, and all of a sudden they're not valedictorian. No. You know, it's a disturbing trend in the country, I think, because this is like, you know, it's like a participation trophy for education. No, you don't get that. You don't get that in life. You don't get that on the job, and you shouldn't get an education. You get it for doing the job and getting things done, getting results. So I don't know what's up with the Department of Education going in this direction. I just don't agree with it at all. And I think it's a big mistake. But, you know, moving right along, the other day I said, I don't know who could possibly replace Alex Trebek as the host of Jeopardy. For those of you that don't know, host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek, died tragically of cancer. He was 80 years old. And he was an icon for that show. And I really don't know who could step in his shoes, but they are looking to see if they can replace him. And, you know, for those watching on YouTube, you can see the pictures of the people that are up there. For those listening, they actually are considering Betty White and George Stephanopoulos as two of the people they're considering as a replacement for Alex Trebek. You know, I can't see Betty White because Betty White is just too funny. Betty White is hilarious. Betty White is just the quintessential comedian. And I think that you can't have a comic on Jeopardy, you know, hosting Jeopardy. Because it's not, you know, Alex Trebek, he had his quips, you know, he had his jokes here and there, but he wasn't a comic, you know, he wasn't funny like that. He, you know, Jeopardy is a different kind of game show in that you have to be very, very kind of rigid and very kind of analytical and professional when you're doing your delivery. So I wouldn't say Betty White. I don't think she would take it either if they offered it to her. No, they also have George Stephanopoulos, who's, you know, an anchor for, I believe, ABC. And I can see him doing it. I honestly can. He's, you know, he has that kind of persona that I think if he was to host a game show, it would have to be like a Jeopardy. It would have to be like a very, as I said before, like a very analytical kind of professional, like this is an intellectual event here, this is a competition of smart people and such. So he has that kind of persona. So who knows? All I know is no one's going to replace Alex Trebek. They're only going to succeed Alex Trebek, because Alex Trebek was Jeopardy. And I hope, you know, that they have, I heard that they honored him in one of the later episodes. I don't know if it's aired yet, because he did a whole bunch of episodes that haven't aired, and he taped a bunch of them. So Jeopardy, man. Alex Trebek, that's a blow, let me tell you. That one hurts to see him go. But just to bring things to a nice little close here, the book that I have for today's episode is Prepare Your Family for Survival: How to Be Ready for Any Emergency or Disaster Situation by Linda Loosley, founder of Food Storage Moms. For those watching on YouTube, I'm just going to hold it up there so you can get a look at the cover. I love this book. As a prepper, this book is very, very useful. It's not too lengthy. You know, some books I have on survival are thick as hell, and they're very wordy. But this, I like the layout, and it also has very, very practical diagrams for certain things. You know, it's very, put it this way, you can skip over the parts that you don't think you're going to need because they don't apply to your disaster preparedness plan. So, it's very easy to read. It's very easy to pick apart the important things that you want to get. It's always good to have a book on survival, you know, in your library at home, so you have this knowledge in case you need it. And hopefully we never do. Well, they're playing us out. So, hey, thanks for listening, you guys. And, stay safe out there. You know, take practical precautions. You know, wear your masks. And I'll see you guys next time. This has been Rich, aka Library Monster, for Behind the Library. Later.